Since 2013, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and acclaimed author Chris Hedges has taught courses in drama, literature, philosophy, and history in the college degree program offered by Rutgers University at East Jersey State Prison and other New Jersey prisons. In his first class at East Jersey State Prison, his students read and discussed plays by August Wilson, among others, and then set out to write a play of their own. That play, Caged, ran for a month in 2018 to sold-out audiences at the Passage Theater in Trenton, New Jersey, and went on to be published. In the new book, Our Class, Trauma and Transformation in an American Prison, Chris Hedges writes about giving voice to the poorest among us and laying bare the cruelty of a penal system that too often defines their lives. In the play Caged, the student gave words to the grief and suffering they and their families have endured, as well as their hopes and dreams. The class's artistic and personal discovery is chronicled in Our Class, giving a face and voice to those prisoners. Chris Hedges is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who was a foreign correspondent and bureau chief in the Middle East and the Balkans for 15 years for the New York Times. Again, the name of the new book is Our Class, Trauma and Transformation in an American Prison, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Chris Hedges to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
So how did this particular book come about, this journey, really, that you took through the prison system?
So I've been teaching in the New Jersey prison system for about a decade. I began before there was a college program. My neighbor, Celia Chazelle, the head of the history department at the College of New Jersey, was teaching semester-long courses, college credit courses, people who usually earn their GED, high school equivalency, in college. It didn't have any academic validity, and she bought the books for the students. But she would, if they completed the coursework, print out a certificate that said that they had done the course for the semester and put it in there. Folder, which helped with their parole. And then eventually Rutgers University, this was about 2010, a couple years later, set up a college degree program, originally an associate's, it's now a BA. And so I started teaching in that program. And I've taught in several prisons in New Jersey. This, in 2013, I went into the prison in Rahway, East Jersey State Prison, and I was teaching a drama course, so we were reading August Wilson, Amiri Baraka, John Herbert, Miguel Pinero, various playwrights. And I asked, and it was clear that my students, I had 28 students, had very little familiarity with drama, with theater, with dramatic form. And so just to get them used to dramatic style, I suggested they write out scenes from their lives in dialogue. Well, what I didn't know is that one of the students, his nickname is Kabir. Kabir in Arabic means big, and he was big, knew who I was and had listened to me on the Pacifica station, WBAI, and recruited the best writers in the prison. So when I got home, I had 28 scenes, and those all on written on lined paper, and it has that kind of musty odor of the prison, which I carried home with me. I read through them, and there was about a half dozen that were just stunning. Well, this happened after, 2-3 weeks. I showed them to my wife, who's a professional actor, graduate of Juilliard, and I said, maybe I can help them write a play. So we stumbled into it. But it ended up being transformative because students started to write about experiences and trauma and that they had never articulated in the prison. They'd been incarcerated together sometimes for decades, and they had never spoken about this kind of stuff. It very swiftly became very emotional. A lot of them are big guys. They call it the 400 Club, which means they all bench press over 400 pounds. But they'd get up in front of the class holding the scenes they had written, and their hands would be shaking and they would be tearing up. And it just shattered the kind of protective emotional walls that are erected to survive in prison. It became an incredibly moving and powerful experience. And we did. We put together this play that was eventually performed by the theater in Trenton, the city of Trenton, the Passage Theater, and then published by Haymarket. And so I use that process of writing the play to really explore the horror of mass incarceration. The play is called Caged, and it really refers to those cages that are erected in poor neighborhoods with often invisible barriers and the very quite real concrete barriers that exist when you finally end up in a prison. And that was kind of how it happened.
Give us a sense about Caged of ultimately how many worked on it, because it was a group project, right, over a period of time.
Yeah, well, so I added another class because I needed more time. I can, under the prison rules, add another class for people who need remedial help. So I just signed all 28 students up for remedial help. And I really served as the editor. I was working on a book, but I had to drop it because I was going through well over 50 scenes a week, trying to cobble them together and then going back and presenting that to the class. So I had a kind of team of script doctors and eventually this whole play took shape. It was fascinating. I mean, for instance, they wanted a corrections officer in the play, but they insisted, although almost all my students are black, they insisted the officer be black. They didn't want the easy racial stereotype. There's a code in the prison, a very hyper-masculine code, and the whole denouement of the play is to show that that code is honored more in the breach than the observance. That in many ways, it's a fiction. It calls for a revenge killing, which doesn't happen. This is all based on... I mean, the other thing that's fascinating about the play is that there's almost nothing in there. It didn't happen to one of my students, including stuff that you just couldn't imagine. One student is locked in a cell his first night in the prison in Trenton, and the guard tells him that was his father's cell.
Mm.
Another student writes about... he has three life sentences, so his chances of getting out of prison are probably zero. But he writes about the guards finding his body, his corpse in the cell, and he writes the dialogue, the kind of banter that they engage in as they shackle him, because prison rules say that corpses, even corpses, have to be shackled when they leave the prison. So it really became a window into... And the first half of the play is set outside the prison in a poor neighborhood in Newark. So it really became a window into the social hell that has been visited on the poor, and in particular, poor people of color in these deindustrialized urban areas.
You write in the book that I did not know that the process would peel back layers of emotional armor and allow my students to be, many for the first time in prison, vulnerable. I did not imagine that these men, many bulked up by weightlifting and covered with crude prison tattoos, would stand in front of their class, their hands shaking slightly as they read their scenes, tears welling up in their eyes. This is as the class is coming to a close and they're reading the play. And it must have been really emotional for you to see that transformation.
Yeah, I mean, several of my students said it's perhaps the maybe the word transformation should be understood as not so much a change, but an expression allowing them to express who they were in a way that the narrow constraints of prison life does not permit, and a kind of flowering almost. I mean, for instance, I had a student who was arrested at the age of 14. He was an orphan. His father had died when he was 2. His mother had died when he was 9. He was living alone in an abandoned house in Camden, New Jersey, which per capita is the poorest city in the United States, and almost year after year, not surprisingly, the most dangerous, highest rate per capita of homicides. And he's picked up and dragged into a police station and coerced into signing a confession for a crime he didn't commit. He can barely read. He's functionally illiterate. He gets to court, and the confession is read. He tries to protest that just didn't happen. It wasn't true. And he's convicted as an adult, although he's a child, and he's not eligible to go before a parole board until he's 70 years old. And he had, in the prison, you speak, I mean, the banter is very much about the experiences you had before you came in. Well, he didn't really have any experiences. He was a child, and he never spoke until that class about how young he was when he came in. There's a play I taught by August Wilson I like very much called Joe Turner, Come and Gone. And in it, Wilson does these cycles. This is an early one. It's set in a boarding house in Pittsburgh at the turn of the century. And you have a character coming up from the South. He's been enslaved after emancipation. The South instituted convict leasing. It's slavery by another name. They would pick up black men for non-crimes. We do that today, of course, but loose cigarettes, etc., vagrancy and this kind of stuff. And they could be sold to plantation owners and work for 7 years, up to 7 years. And it was actually even more punishing than slavery, because since these people didn't pay anything for these bodies, the mortality rates were astronomical, especially in the turpentine camps in northern Florida and other places. So he comes up and he's looking for his wife, and there's a conjurer who keeps saying that you have to find your song, because the dominant society is never going to give you your song. You have to know where you came from and know who your ancestors are. It's a very recurrent theme in August Wilson. And that's what these students, I think, finally achieved, was that by writing this play, it became their song. And that's why I was so dedicated when we finished to getting it produced, so that their song could be heard. It was a song that even those around them within the prison had never heard before.
Chris Hedges is our guest. The new book is Our Class, Trauma and Transformation in an American Prison. What were your expectations? I mean, obviously you didn't expect to write a play, but I'm curious as to what your thoughts were on our justice system and correctional facilities in general, and how that changed, if it did change, over the course of this project.
Well, I had a pretty clear understanding of how the judicial system works or doesn't work in the United States. I'd been in the prison, teaching in the prisons for 3 years. Before then, I also ran a support group for ex-offenders in Elizabeth, New Jersey, out of the church there. Prison, along with militarized police, are now the two primary forms of social control in poor neighborhoods, because the social bonds that work and a place in society and all of the ties that hold you to a society are severed, and they've been replaced with coercion. And so poor people are railroaded into the prison system. 94% never get a jury trial. That's by design. The system would break down if everyone – it's not equipped to give everyone a jury trial. And so pleas are forced out of defendants, and you do that by stacking numerous charges against them, most of which both the police and the prosecutor know they didn't commit, but that becomes a way to bargain down the number of years that you serve. And in fact, the tragedy is that the students that I teach with the longest sentences are the ones who did go to trial, and they're almost always the ones who didn't commit the crime. And they naively believe that because they were innocent, the court would validate that innocence. And so all of the charges are arrayed against them, and they have just horrific sentences, and they are used as a kind of example to everyone else. And the prosecutor can say, well, you want to go to trial, look what happened to Lawrence, or look what happened to Boris. And that, of course, is why even when people did not commit the crime, they will plead guilty and take the plea deal. So I was well aware of how the judicial system functioned. I had actually, when I was with the New York Times, broken a corrupt circle, a kind of secret society of police officers in the city of Elizabeth called The Family, who had a 98% conviction rate because they kept drugs in the trunks of their squad cars and planted them on suspects and railroaded them to court. And I got the lieutenant and some other people fired when that investigation was published. You couldn't buy the New York Times in Elizabeth, New Jersey on the day it came out. But they never went back and revisited the cases. So, you know, potentially hundreds of lives were destroyed because of this. So I had a pretty good sense of the judicial system before I went in there. But I think that what this play does really well and what we talk about in the book is how pervasive that injustice is. One of my students, Boris Franklin, said by the end of that semester, we realized that as poor black men in America, in many ways, we all had the same story. I mean, there were variations and differences on that story, but the core of it, driven by white supremacy, deindustrialization, neoliberalism, is the same story.
You get the sense in the book, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but while those situations were different and the backgrounds were often different, there were certainly many, many similarities. But when it came to telling the story, when it came to telling the play, that the students were very much on the same page.
Yeah, they came out of poor neighborhoods in New Jersey, Paterson, Camden, Newark, Jersey City. And many of them had been forced into the underground or illegal economy because it was the only way they could survive. So, yes, there was a commonality that they all experienced. And I think that the power of the play and the power of the book is that it gives voice, because I really, especially in the book, tell their stories. Which they tell in the class, but I write about it in the book, and you just see how we have failed these people as a society, and the consequences of that failure.
And how did they internalize that? How did they deal with that, knowing that they are paying the ultimate price, obviously, of being in prison, of how they feel about that?
Well, there's a justifiable anger,
right?
An anger at what was done to their families, what was done to them, that their voices are not heeded and not heard, that mass media has rendered them invisible. And if they're not invisible, they're demonized as part of the criminal caste system that we have created towards formerly incarcerated people. There's an alienation and a very understandable anger, but also an understanding of how society works. They get neoliberalism because they're victims of it. They get white supremacy and institutional racism because they've been victims of it. They don't buy the myth of America because it has palpably been a lie in their lives and the lives of their family members and the lives of everyone around them. So I've taught in elite universities, Princeton, Columbia, NYU, other places. And the level of discussion in that prison classroom begins at a bar that most of these entitled students can't even begin to reach.
How do you personally, you've done the play and now you've written the book, you will return to the prisons to teach, I assume?
Yeah, I am supposed to go back in. Because of COVID, I was actually co-teaching a course with the writer Matt Taibbi when COVID hit, and we only got halfway through the semester. But yes, I'll go back in next spring.
Do you have a thought now of what you can achieve in the sense of another play, or like the first time, it will take you where it takes you?
I don't know that I'd write another play. I don't know that we can replicate that experience. And then again, you know, as I said earlier, it wasn't something that was premeditated. I stumbled into it. It also swallowed hundreds of hours of my life, because when I began the play, I asked who wanted parts. Only 7 people wanted parts. But as we got into the writing, all 28 students wanted parts. So we had to write 28 parts into the play. And then when the semester was over, and fortunately for me, my best writer, Boris Franklin, got out. And he and I worked together for 3 years with my wife and with a theater director in New York, Jeffrey Wise, who very generously workshopped the play. We had to make it work on stage. It wasn't a concern whether it worked on stage or not. When we wrote it, we had to consolidate the characters, roughly a half dozen. That meant melding characters together. It was quite a long process that Boris and I undertook to bring the play to a point where it actually could be mounted in a professional theater, which it was finally. And so I don't have any plans to go ahead and do that again. It was a multi-year process.
The name of the new book is Our Class, Trauma and Transformation in American Prison. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Chris Hedges, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Our Class. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.